Yes, Rashik made good use of his enemy's culture in developing the final empire. Yet, other elements of imperial culture were a complete contrast to Helenium and its society. The lives of the Ska were modeled after the slave peoples of the Kenzi. The terrace stewards resembled the servant class of Urten, which Rashik conquered relatively late in his first century of life. The imperial religion, with its obligators, actually appears to have arisen from the bureaucratic mercantile system of the Holland, a people who were very focused on weights, measures, and permissions. The fact that the Lord Ruler would base his church on a financial institution shows, in my opinion, that he worried less about true faith in his followers and more about stability, loyalty, and quantifiable measures of devotion. 27. Vin shot through the dark night air. Mist swirled about her, a spinning, seething storm of white upon black. It darted close to her body, as if snapping at her, but never came closer than a few inches away, as if blown back by some current of air. She remembered a time when the mist had skimmed close to her skin, rather than being repelled. The transition had been gradual. It had taken months before she had realized the change. She wore no mist cloak. It felt odd to be leaping about in the mists without one of the garments, but in truth, she was quieter this way. Once, the mist cloak had been useful in making guards or thieves turn away at her passing. However, like the era of friendly mists, that time had passed. So instead, she wore only a black shirt and trousers, both closely fitted to her body to keep the sounds of flapping fabric to a minimum. As always, she wore no metal, save for the coins in her pouch and an extra vial of metals in her sash. She pulled out a coin now, its familiar weight wrapped in a layer of cloth, and threw it beneath her. A push against the metal sent it slamming into the rocks below, but the cloth dampened the sound of its striking. She used the push to slow her descent, popping her up slightly into the air. She landed carefully on a rock ledge, then pulled the coin back into her hand. She crept across the rocky shelf, fluffy ash beneath her toes. A short distance away, a small group of guards sat in the darkness, whispering quietly, watching Ellen's army camp, which was now little more than a haze of campfire light in the mists. The guards spoke of the spring chill, commenting that it seemed colder this year than it had in previous ones. Though Vin was barefoot, she rarely noticed the cold. A gift of pewter. Vin burned bronze and heard no pulsings. None of the men were burning metals. One of the reasons Set had come to Luthadel in the first place was because he'd been unable to raise enough allomancers to protect him from mistborn assassins. No doubt Lord Yeoman had experienced similar trouble recruiting allomancers, and he probably wouldn't have sent those he did have out into the cold to watch an enemy camp. Vin crept past the guard post. She didn't need allomancy to keep her quiet. She and her brother Reen had sometimes been burglars sneaking into homes. She had a lifetime of training that Elend would never know or understand. He could practice with pewter all he liked, and he really was getting better, but he'd never be able to replicate instincts honed by a childhood spent sneaking to stay alive. As soon as she was past the guard post, she jumped into the mists again, using her sound-deadened coins as anchors. She gave the fires at the front of the city a wide berth, instead rounding to the rear of Fadrick's. Most of the patrols would be at the front of the city, for the back was protected by the steep walls of the rising rock formations. Of course, that barely inconvenienced Vin, and she soon found herself dropping several hundred feet through the air along a rock wall before landing in an alley at the very back of the city. She took to the roofs and did a quick survey, jumping from street to street in wide allomantic leaps. She was quickly impressed with Fadrix's size. Ellen had called the city provincial, and Vin had imagined a town barely larger than a village. Once they'd arrived, she'd instead begun to imagine a barricaded, austere city, more like a fort. Fadrix was neither. She should have realized that Elland, who had been raised in the sprawling metropolis of Luthadel, would have a skewed concept of what constituted a large city. Fadrix was plenty big. Vin counted several ska slums, a smattering of noble mansions, and even two Luthadel-style keeps. The grand stone structures sported the typical arrangement of stained-glass windows and soaring buttressed walls. These were undoubtedly the homes of the most important nobles in the city. She landed on a rooftop near one of the keeps. Most of the buildings in the city were only a single story or two, which was quite a change from the high tenements of Luthadel. They were spaced out a bit more, and tended to be flat and squat, rather than tall and peaked. That only made the massive keep seem so much larger by comparison. The building was rectangular, with a row of three peaked towers rising from each end. Ornamented white stonework ran around the entire perimeter at the top. And the walls, of course, were lined with beautiful stained-glass windows lit from inside. Vin crouched on a low rooftop, looking at the colored beauty of the swirling mists. For a moment, she was taken back to a time 3 years before, when she had attended balls in keeps like this one in Luthadel, as part of Kelsier's plan to overthrow the final empire. She had been an uncertain, nervous thing back then, worried that her newfound world of a trustworthy crew and beautiful parties would collapse around her. And, in a way, it had, for that world was gone. She had helped to destroy it. Yet, during those months, she had been content. Perhaps more content than any other time in her life. She loved Elland, and was glad life had progressed to the point where she could call him husband. But there had been a delicious innocence about her early days with the crew. Dances spent with Elland reading at her table, pretending to ignore her. Nights spent learning the secrets of allomancy. Evenings spent sitting around the table at Clubs's shop, sharing laughter with the crew. They'd faced the challenge of planning something as large as the fall of an empire, yet felt no burden of leadership or weight of responsibility for the future. Somehow she had grown into a woman in between the fall of kings and collapse of worlds. Once she had been terrified of change. Then she had been terrified of losing Elland. Now her fears were more nebulous. Worries of what would come after she was gone. Worries of what would happen to the people of the Empire if she failed to divine the secrets she sought. She turned from her contemplation of the large castle-like keep, pushing herself off of a chimney brace and into the night. Attending those balls in Luthadel had changed her dramatically, leaving a residual effect that she'd never been able to shake. Something within her had responded instantly to the dancing and the parties. For the longest time, she'd struggled to understand how that part of her fit into the rest of her life. She still wasn't certain she knew the answer. Was Valette Renu, the girl she had pretended to be at the balls, really a part of Vin? Or just a fabrication devised to serve Kelsier's plot? Vin bounded across the city, making cursory notes of fortifications and troop placements. Hammond Demu would probably find a way to get true military spies into the city eventually, but they'd want to hear preliminary information from Vin. She also made note of living conditions. Elland had hoped that the city would be struggling, a factor that his siege would exacerbate, making Lord Yeoman more likely to capitulate. She found no obvious signs of mass starvation or disrepair, though it was difficult to tell much at night. Still, the city streets were kept swept of ash, and a remarkable number of the noble homes appeared occupied. She would have expected the noble population to be the first to bolt at the news of an approaching army. Frowning to herself, Vin completed her loop of the city, landing in a particular square that Set had suggested. The mansions here were separated from each other by large grounds and cultivated trees. She walked along the street, counting them off. At the fourth mansion, she leaped up and over the gate, then moved up the hill to the house. She wasn't certain what she expected to find. Set had been absent from the city for 2 years, after all. Yet he'd indicated that this informant was the most likely to be of help. True to Set's instructions, the rear balcony of the mansion was lit. Vin waited in the darkness suspiciously, the mist cold and unfriendly, yet providing cover. She didn't trust Set. She worried that he still bore her a grudge for her attack on his keep in Luthadel a year before. Wary, she dropped a coin and launched herself into the air. A lone figure sat on the balcony, fitting the description in Set's instructions. Those same instructions gave this informant the nickname Slow Swift. The old man appeared to be reading by the light of a lamp. Vin frowned, but as instructed, she landed on the balcony railing, crouching beside a ladder that would have allowed a more mundane visitor to approach. The old man did not look up from his book. He puffed quietly on a pipe, a thick woolen blanket across his knees. Vin wasn't certain if he noticed her or not. She cleared her throat.
"Yes, yes," the old man said calmly. "I shall be with you in a moment."
Vin cocked her head, looking at the strange man with his bushy eyebrows and frosty white hair. He was dressed in a nobleman's suit, with a scarf and an overcoat that bore an oversized fur collar. He appeared to be completely unconcerned by the mistborn crouching on his railing. Eventually, the elderly man closed his book, then turned toward her.
"Do you enjoy stories, young lady?"
"What kind of stories?"
"The best kind, of course," Slow Swift said, tapping his book. "The kind about monsters and myths. Long tales, some call them. Stories told by Scar around the fires, whispering of mist wraiths, sprites, and brawlins and such."
"I don't have much time for stories," Vin said.
"Seems that fewer and fewer people do these days."
A canopy kept off the ash, but he seemed unconcerned about the mists.
"It makes me wonder what is so alluring about the real world that gives them all such a fetish for it. It's not a very nice place these days."
Vin did a quick check with bronze, but the man burned nothing. What was his game?
"I was told that you could give me information," she said carefully.
"That I can certainly do," the man said.
Then he smiled, glancing at her.
"I have a wealth of information, though somehow I suspect that you might find most of it useless."
"I'll listen to a story, if that's what it will cost," the man chuckled.
"There's no surer way to kill a story than to make it a cost, young lady. What is your name, and who sent you?"
"Vin Venture," Vin said. "Set gave me your name."
"Ah," the man said. "That scoundrel still alive?"
"Yes."
"Well, I suppose I could chat with someone sent by an old writing friend. Come down off that railing. You're giving me vertigo."
Vin climbed down, wary.
"Writing friend?"
"Set is one of the finest poets I know, child," said Slow Swift, waving her toward a chair. "We shared our work with one another for a good decade or so before politics stole him away. He didn't like stories either. To him, everything had to be gritty and real, even his poetry. Seems like an attitude with which you'd agree."
Vin shrugged, sitting in the indicated chair.
"I suppose."
"I find that ironic in a way you shall never understand," the old man said, smiling. "Now, what is it you wish of me?"
"I need to know about Yeoman, the Obligator King."
"He's a good man,"
Vin frowned.
"Oh,"
Slow Swift said.
"You didn't expect that? Everyone who is your enemy must also be an evil person?"
"No,"
Vin said, thinking back to the days before the fall of the Final Empire. "I ended up marrying someone my friends would have named an enemy."
"Ah, well then. Yeoman is a fine man, and a decent king. A fair bit better a king than Set ever was, I'd say. My old friend tries too hard, and that makes him brutal. He doesn't have the subtle touch that a leader needs."
What has Yeoman done that is so good, then? Vin asked.
He kept the city from falling apart,
Slowswift said, puffing on his pipe. The smoke mixed with the swirling mists.
Plus he gave both nobility and Scar what they wanted.
Which was?
Stability, child. For a time the world was in turmoil. Neither Scar nor nobleman knew his place. Society was collapsing and people were starving. Set did little to stop that. He fought constantly to keep what he'd killed to obtain. Then Yeoman stepped in. People saw authority in him. Before the collapse, the Lord Ruler's ministry had ruled, and the people were ready to accept an obligator as a leader. Yeoman immediately took control of the plantations and brought food to his people. Then he returned the factories to operation, started work in the Fadrix mines again, and gave the nobility a semblance of normalcy.
Vin sat quietly. Before, it might have seemed incredible to her that, after 1,000 years of oppression, the people would willingly return to slavery. Yet something similar had happened in Luthadel. They had ousted Elend, who had granted them great freedoms, and had put Penrod in charge, all because he promised them a return to what they had lost. "Yeoman is an obligator," she said.
"People like what is familiar, child."
"They're oppressed."
"Someone must lead," the old man said. "And someone must follow. That is the way of things. Yeoman has given the people something they've been crying for since the collapse. Identity. The Scar may work, they may be beaten, they may be enslaved, but they know their place. The nobility may spend their time going to balls, but there is an order to life again."
"Balls?" Vin asked. "The world is ending and Yeoman is throwing balls?"
"Of course," Slowswift said, taking a long, slow puff on his pipe. "Yeoman rules by maintaining the familiar. He gives the people what they had before, and balls were a large part of life before the collapse, even in a smaller city like Fadrix. Why, there's one happening tonight at Keep Auriel."
"On the very day an army arrived to besiege the city."
"You just pointed out that the world seems very close to disaster," the old man said, pointing at her with his pipe. "In the face of that, an army doesn't mean much. Plus, Yeoman understands something even the Lord Ruler didn't. Yeoman always personally attends the balls thrown by his subjects. In doing so, he comforts and reassures them. That makes a day like this, when an army arrived, a perfect day for a ball."
Vin sat back, uncertain what to think. Of all the things she had expected to find in the city, courtly balls were very low on the list.
"So," she said, "what's Yeoman's weakness? Is there something in his past that we can use? What quirks of personality make him vulnerable? Where should we strike?"
Slowswift puffed quietly on his pipe, a breeze blowing mist and ash across his elderly figure.
"Well?" Vin asked.
The old man let out a breath of mist and smoke.
"I just told you that I like the man, child. What would possess me to give you information to use against him?"
"You're an informant," Vin said. "That's what you do. Sell information."
"I'm a storyteller," Slowswift corrected, "and not every story is meant for every set of ears. Why should I talk to those who would attack my city and overthrow my liege?"
"We'd give you a powerful position in the city once it's ours."
Slowswift snorted quietly.
"If you think such things would interest me, then Set obviously told you little regarding my temperament."
"We could pay you well."
"I sell information, child, not my soul."
"You're not being very helpful," Vin noted.
"And tell me, dear child," he said, smiling slightly, "why exactly should I care?"
Vin frowned.
This is, she thought, undoubtedly the strangest informant meeting I've ever been to.
Slowswift puffed on his pipe. He didn't appear to be waiting for her to say anything. In fact, he seemed to think the conversation was over.
He's a nobleman, Vin thought. He likes the way that the world used to be. It was comfortable. Even Ska fear change.
Vin stood. I'll tell you why you should care, old man. Because the ash is falling, and soon it will cover up your pretty little city. The mists kill. Earthquakes shake the landscape, and the ash mounts burn hotter and hotter. Change is looming. Eventually, even Yeoman won't be able to ignore it. You hate change. I hate it, too. But things can't stay the same. And that's well. For when nothing changes in your life, it's as good as being dead.
She turned to leave.
They say you'll stop the ash,
the old man said quietly from behind.
Turn the sun yellow again. They call you heir of the survivor, hero of ages.
Vin paused, turning to look through the traitorous mist toward the man with his pipe and closed book.
Yes, she said.
Seems like quite the destiny to live up to.
It's either that or give up.
Slowswift sat silently for a moment.
Sit down, child,
the old man finally said, gesturing toward the seat again. Vin reseated herself.
Yeoman is a good man, Slowswift said, but only a mediocre leader. He's a bureaucrat, a member of the Canton of Resource. He can make things happen, get supplies to the right places, organize construction projects. Ordinarily, that would have made him a good enough ruler. However,
not when the world is ending, Vin said softly.
Precisely. If what I've heard is true, then your husband is a man of vision and action. If our little city is going to survive, then we'll need to be part of what you are offering.
What do we do, then?
Yeoman has few weaknesses, Slowswift said. He's a calm man, and an honorable one. However, he has an unfailing belief in the Lord Ruler and his organization.
Even now? Vin asked. The Lord Ruler died.
Yes, so? Slowswift asked, amused. And your survivor? Last I checked, he was somewhat dead as well. Didn't seem to hinder his revolution much, now did it?
Good point.
Yeoman is a believer, Slowswift said. That may be a weakness. It may be a strength. Believers are often willing to attempt the seemingly impossible, then count on Providence to see them through.
He paused, glancing at Vin.
That sort of behavior can be a weakness if the belief is misplaced.
Vin said nothing. Belief in the Lord Ruler was misplaced. If he'd been a god, then she wouldn't have been able to kill him. In her mind, it was a rather simple matter.
If Yeoman has another weakness, Slowswift said, it is his wealth.
Hardly a weakness.
It is if you can't account for its source. He got money somewhere, a suspiciously vast amount of it, far more than even local ministry coffers should have been able to provide. Nobody knows where it came from.
The cash, Vin thought, perking up. He really does have the ATM.
You reacted a little strongly to that one, Slowswift said, taking a puff on his pipe. You should try to give less away when speaking with an informant.
Vin flushed.
Anyway, the old man said, turning back to his book, if that is all, I should like to return to my reading. Give my regards to Ashweather.
Vin nodded, rising and moving over toward the banister. As she did, however, Slowswift cleared his throat.
Usually, he noted, there is compensation for acts such as mine.
Vin raised an eyebrow.
I thought you said that stories shouldn't cost.
Actually, Slowswift noted, I said that a story itself shouldn't be a cost. That is very different from the story itself costing something. And, while some will argue, I believe that a story without cost is one considered worthless.
I'm sure that's the only reason, Vin said, smiling slightly as she tossed her bag of coins, minus a few cloth-covered ones to use for jumping, to the old man. Gold Imperials. Still good here, I assume?
Good enough, the old man said, tucking them away. Good enough.
Vin jumped out into the night, leaping a few houses away, burning bronze to see if she felt any alomantic pulses from behind. She knew that her nature made her irrationally suspicious of people who appeared weak. For the longest time, she'd been convinced that Set was Mistborn, simply because he was paraplegic. Still, she checked on Slowswift. This was one old habit that she didn't feel much need to extinguish. No pulses came from behind. Soon she moved on, pulling out Set's instructions, searching out a second informant. She trusted Slowswift's words well enough, but she would like confirmation. She picked an informant on the other side of the spectrum, a beggar named Hoyd, whom Set claimed could be found in a particular square late at night. A few quick jumps brought her to the location. She landed atop a roof and looked down, scanning the area. The ash had been allowed to drift here, piling in corners, making a general mess of things. A group of lumps huddled in an alley beside the square. Beggars without home or job. Vin had lived like that at times, sleeping in alleys, coughing up ash, hoping it wouldn't rain. She soon located a figure that wasn't sleeping like the others, but sitting quietly in the light ash fall. Her ears picked out a faint sound. The man was humming to himself, as the instructions said that he might be doing. Vin hesitated. She couldn't decide what it was, but something bothered her about the situation. It wasn't right. She didn't stop to think, she simply turned and jumped away. That was one of the big differences between her and Elland. She didn't always need a reason. A feeling was enough. He always wanted to tease things out and find a why. And she loved him for his logic. However, he would have been very frustrated about her decision to turn away from the square as she had. Perhaps nothing bad would have happened if she'd gone into the square. Perhaps something terrible would have occurred. She would never know. Nor did she need to know. As she had countless other times in her life, Vin simply accepted her instincts and moved on. Her flight took her along a street that Set had noted in his instructions. Curious, Vin didn't search out another informant, but instead followed the road, bounding from anchor to anchor in the pervasive mists. She landed on a cobbled street a short distance from a building with lit windows. Blocky and utilitarian, the building was nonetheless daunting, if only because of its size. Set had written that the Canton of Resource was the largest of the Steel Ministry buildings in the city. Fadrix had acted as a kind of way station between Luthadel and more important cities to the west. Near several main canal routes and well fortified against banditry, the city was the perfect place for a Canton of Resource regional headquarters. Yet Fadrix hadn't been important enough to attract the Cantons of Orthodoxy or Inquisition, traditionally the most powerful of the ministry departments. That meant that Yeoman, as head obligator at the Resource Building, had been the area's top religious authority. From what Slowswift said, Vin assumed that Yeoman was pretty much a standard Resource obligator. Dry, boring, but terribly efficient. And so, of course, he'd chosen to make his old Canton building into his palace. It was what Set had suspected, and Vin could easily see that it was true. The building bustled with activity despite the late hour, and was guarded by platoons of soldiers. Yeoman had probably chosen the building in order to remind everyone where his authority originated. Unfortunately, it was also where the Lord Ruler's supply cache would be located. Vin sighed, turning from her contemplation of the building. Part of her wanted to sneak in and try to find her way down to the cavern beneath. Instead, she dropped a coin and shot herself into the air.
Even Kelsier wouldn't have tried breaking into the place on his first night of scouting. She'd gotten into the one in her toe, but it had been abandoned. She had to confer with Elland and study the city for a few days before she did something as bold as sneak into a fortified palace. Using starlight and tin, Vin read off the name of the third and final informant. It was another nobleman, which wasn't surprising, considering Set's own station. She began moving in the direction indicated. However, as she moved, she noticed something. She was being followed. She only caught hints of him behind her, obscured by the patterns of swirling mist. Tentatively, Vin burned bronze, and was rewarded with a very faint thumping from behind. An obscured allomantic pulse. Usually, when an allomancer burned copper, as the one behind her was doing, it made him invisible to the allomantic bronze sense. Yet, for some reason Vin had never been able to explain, she could see through this obfuscation. The Lord Ruler had been able to do likewise, as had his inquisitors. Vin continued to move. The allomancer following her obviously believed himself, or herself, invisible to Vin's senses. He moved with quick, easy bounds, following at a safe distance. He was good without being excellent, and he was obviously mistborn, for only a mistborn could have burned both copper and steel at the same time. Vin wasn't surprised. She'd assumed that if there were any mistborn in the city, her leaping would draw their attention. Just in case, she hadn't bothered burning any copper herself, leaving her pulses open to be heard by anyone, mistborn or seeker, who was listening. Better an enemy drawn out than one hiding in the shadows. She increased her pace, though not suspiciously so, and the person following had to move quickly to keep up. Vin kept going toward the front of the city, as if planning to leave. As she got closer, her allomantic senses produced twin blue lines pointing at the massive iron brackets holding the city gates to the rock at their sides. The brackets were large, substantial sources of metal, and the lines they gave off were bright and thick, which meant they would make excellent anchors. Flaring her pewter to keep from being crushed, Vin pushed on the brackets, throwing herself backward. Immediately, the allomantic pulses behind her disappeared. Vin shot through ash and mist, even her tight clothing flapping slightly from the wind. She quickly pulled herself down to a rooftop and crouched, tense. The other allomancer must have stopped burning his metals. But why would he do that? Did he know that she could pierce copper clouds? If he did, then why had he followed her so recklessly? Vin felt a chill. There was something else that gave off allomantic pulses in the night. The mist spirit. She hadn't seen it in over a year. In fact, during her last encounter with it, it had nearly killed Elland, only then to restore him by making him mistborn. She still didn't know how the spirit fit into all of this. It wasn't Ruin. She had felt Ruin's presence when she'd freed him at the Well of Ascension. They were different. "I don't even know if this was the spirit tonight," Vin told herself. Yet the one tailing her had vanished so abruptly. Confused and chilled, she pushed herself out of the city and quickly made her way back to Ellen's camp.